You are Locked On Wizards, your daily Washington Wizards podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Did you call game? I called game.
Gilbert, fade away.
Dagger!
Oh, Wizards win it!
Arenas hits the shot at the buzzer!
Hey, what's up, everyone? Ben Standick here for another edition of the Locked On Wizards podcast. Got another fun podcast at Parkway interview with my pal Cara Maloney from NBC4. Interesting conversation on a lot of different topics. We got into John Wall's contract situation. We got into Wizards Celtics. Cara was at up in Boston for the end of that. We also talked a bunch about Markelle Fultz, the DeMatha product who went to University of Washington this past season, and he is right now the favorite to be the number one overall pick in the NBA draft. Carol had a chance to talk to him. If the Celtics keep the pick, he would go to Boston, or if they take him, he'd go to Boston. So we talked about that dynamic. Sort of interesting there. Local kid we everybody may all of a sudden not be big fans of by next year. And Carol had some really interesting insight about meeting this kid and what he's all about. So that was also a big part of our conversation. And a bunch of other interesting things. So I think you guys are going to like this one. If you missed it, earlier this week I did a three-parter with my guy Kyle Wiedeye from truthaboutit.net. Part one, we look back at the playoffs, the Celtics in particular, what happened there. Part two, the season as a whole, where we thought the highs, the lows, what have you. And then part three, we looked ahead to what's coming up for the Wizards' future. The Summer League, the D League, Marcin Gortat, a really good one there. I've got a little bit more with my conversation with Kyle. I will play for that for you guys later on as well. So that's a lot going on there. As always, you can find the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. Subscribe there. When you do, you won't miss any of the podcasts. And I know it's getting to be summertime. You guys are going to have your minds all over the places. Some work, but a lot of fun. And if you subscribe, you definitely will. You don't have to think about the podcast. You just have to know it's there and listen to it as needed. All right. I'm not going to delay this anymore. Let's get right to it. My conversation with Cara Maloney. We had been talking for a little bit before I turned the recorder on. And we got it. We talked about a famous actor who Carol went back at her waiting table days. Waited on, and we got into that. So anyway, here we go. My conversation with Cara Maloney from NBC4. And of course, many thanks to our friends at Parkway Deli. Grub Road in Silver Spring, Maryland, right off East West Highway. They're kind enough to sponsor this particular podcast each week. Great place, highly recommend, and I highly recommend this podcast. Here we go, right now.
We just broke the number one rule. We didn't save it for the show.
Oh yeah, I know. We've been very bad here. But you have all you know it's part. I view the podcast sometimes as therapy. Mm-hmm. So you know, you're getting your therapy, and that's all.
I love it. It's so funny.
So I don't think you actually told me what did Clint Eastwood leave you for a tip?
$50.
On a what?
No, it was Clint Eastwood and his group. So it wasn't just Clint Eastwood.
$50 now.
$50. I'll never forget it. I want to say it was like a $120 bill, and they left me $50.
Okay, so that's a good.
I remember saying it was good. It wasn't the best tip I ever got.
Yeah, okay, it's okay. And I'm not going to age you by any stretch, but like that doesn't seem like I guess I'm used to like hearing like Amy Schumer's leaving like a $1,000 tip on like what we just had here at the Parkway Deli for lunch.
Yeah.
And yeah, so $50 from Clint Eastwood.
This is 20 years ago.
And his people. You're not even saying it was just Clint Eastwood.
No. No, I'm not saying it was I just remember them being good tippers. They said he's a good tipper.
Right.
He came in multiple times and always left me a good tip.
So if his name
probably
was
40%. But I mean, he's not going to drop $1,000. He's Clint Eastwood. He goes out to eat every night.
So, okay, so if his name was Clint Smith, you'd be like, hey, that guy, Clint Smith, he's a pretty good tipper.
We'd be fighting over his table.
Clint Eastwood, it's like, bro, where's that Dirty Harry
movie? No, I'll take it. He didn't even have to tip me. I'm surprised we even charged him. I mean, we were so happy to have him in the restaurant. Because it was just him. And I want to say the very first time I waited on him, he wasn't the one paying the bill. It was the publicist guy. So.
So he's. So that's what I'm saying. Not only was he not doing it, the publicist was doing it.
I remember being so floored because this is back when I was in college, or I was just getting out of college, and I wasn't very good about making healthy choices. But I remember.
Says the person whose former Twitter bio says.
Ranch dressing.
Right. Automatically, that takes you out of the good.
If I get
good,
a salad, good. It's ranch dressing. Forget that balsamic, you know, red vinegar crap. No. So he, it was like when I first started getting his order, I remember he was very specific about not having any cream, having like this whole wheat pasta with mushrooms and some vegetables. And I, of course, took. And how many years ago was this? I mean, this is when they were filming Bridges of Madison County. So you can probably look it up. I'm totally dating myself. But I remember just being like, that's how they have to do it in Hollywood, you know? And he was too skinny. I always thought his face needed more fat. Something I worry about if I lose weight. You know, you have people with skinny faces. It shows off
things
everywhere.
I've never worried about in my life.
You're like so lucky.
Yeah.
I'm always eating avocado, trying to be like, hope that fat just goes right to my face. Because it makes you look youthful.
And you said you saw Meryl Streep. Did she act like a person?
Okay, so Meryl Streep did not come off the best. And the two times that I waited on her, she came in more than those two times. She had no makeup on and did not want to socialize whatsoever. The one night in particular was just the two of them, and they got a booth, and she didn't really want to be bothered. Where he had turned in, at this point, he was very friendly with me because I was his waitress in Iowa. So he's all chatty. She just wanted me to go away. And, you know, you as a waiter, you have to pick up on what they were probably coming to dinner, the two of them. After a long day of shooting and stuff. And I think she took her role very seriously, where she, you know, that, what was she, Francesca or whatever she was in the movie. Now I don't even remember. But she was this Iowa housewife that was really shy. And I think she took that into her, you know, character as she went home. She was a character actor. So right. I think that's the person I was waiting on.
Gotcha. Well, these are the things I did not know.
Useless but fascinating is my.
Oh no! Anybody's celebrity encounters over the years are always interesting. If nothing else, it's interesting because who you find to be interesting and what they did. Some people's stories are good. Some people's are. Wait, what? Why are you telling me that? That's a weird story. You know what's not a weird story? The rise of Markelle Fultz.
Yeah.
You just talked to him, and you can go watch the interview over at NBCWashington.com. Click on the sportsy. It's either under the sports tab or the Capital Games. I think it's under the Capital Games tab.
Right.
So anyway, you interviewed him. You had a point in the interview that I thought was interesting, because this is how I've sort of viewed Markelle Fultz, as somebody who covers college basketball and therefore recruiting in town to some degree. Like, there was one point where Georgetown was looking at him, but then he blew past them in terms of how good he was, and going to Washington, it's not like going to Duke or Carolina, so that was weird. But there was definitely a point where, when he was like a sophomore, junior, I wasn't viewing that. My perception of him was not the guy who was going to be the number one pick in the draft.
I know.
Maybe he's a four-star recruit, goes to, can help his college team. Maybe he even becomes a star of the team. The number one pick in the draft, I don't know when that, I guess like before, right when he got to Washington, started to become a thing, but I was still sort of, thought that was kind of weird, and sort of something you kind of got into him.
No,
before,
I think that is one of the most interesting aspects to the general public, and it should be an inspiration to everybody. It immediately was like, it's like Michael Jordan, where you are, he wasn't recruited like in coming into high school, so he didn't get money. He didn't get financial aid going to DeMatha. His single mother had to figure it out. Did you see that? You didn't see that part of the story. I did another mother version. She said she sent him there with that $13,000, you know, $800 tuition bill and didn't know how she was going to pay it. And every month she called the office and said, you know, she just wanted to send him there so he'd be ready for college. You know, the older sister has a master's degree. She was doing what was right for him academically. And he is an A student. He got his one and done year at Washington. He got a 3.4 in the fall and a 3.6, he said, even better. He said 3.6, 3.8 in the spring semester as he's one and done. This is his grade point average. So he always was into his academics, never his basketball. Well, his sophomore year, he didn't make the varsity team at DeMatha. So here you go from, this is 4 years ago. 4 years ago, you get the list, who's on varsity? He's not. He's on JV. And you go from there, I said, how did you do it? How did you create yourself to be, you know, somebody who is just kind of lucky to be there? You're a sophomore, you know, you're on JV, you're not even a star at your own school, to now being a projected number one overall in the draft. Well, one, that day he gets right in the, it's the Michael Jordan. It'll fuel him forever. He got right in the gym, you know, huge chip on his shoulder. He's got this freak athletic ability now. I mean, it probably always had it, but he grew 5 inches, I think, that summer. And that kind, when you have a chip on your shoulder, you have the natural athletic ability, and, you know, you have the resources. He has his trainer, his Uncle Keith, his mom. He's a very tight circle of people for propelling him. Now, he went to Washington. Just because you're the number one, if he is indeed the number one, doesn't mean, he knows. He goes, the ball's going to stop bouncing for me one day. That's why I'm studying so hard.
Well, and like you pointed out to me, like, some guys are smart people and they get good grades. But a lot of times these one and done kids, the perception is they go to college, the second semester they don't even bother.
They don't even bother showing up.
Because they know they're leaving, and it won't, even if they're ineligible, well, it won't matter.
And you
got to
get ready for these camps and these workouts.
And yet you said he got, what, a 3.4 or 3.6?
3.6. He did better his second semester.
Yeah, that says a lot about his character.
Respectful. He was please and thank you. I'm sure his mother is so proud. And I said to her, you know, what are you most proud of? And she said she'd go visit him in Washington, and she said ushers and security guards would always tell me how nice he is to them. And she said, that's what I'm most proud of.
Right.
You know what I mean? So how you treat people who you don't need to treat well, that's like a sign of your character. And so everything says, and who knows what the future holds for him. But he seems to have a really good head on his shoulders. He's got all these athletic gifts. Of course, I'm like, you know, please be careful where you step. Don't run up and down stairs. You know, as a mother, I'm always like, oh my gosh, the next 1 month, it's gonna take forever to get, just get here already. But his mother's very organized. She's very sweet. She's just becoming, she said, a little bit more comfortable talking about herself because she's been getting all these interview requests. But she shared with me that she's moving in with him. And he laughs because I don't know how long that's going to be. He's like, I'm going to let her think that. I don't want to break her heart. But they're best friends right now.
Right.
And he said, if anyone needs a security guard, hire my mother. Because she's my height. She's probably 5'2". But you can't get to him without going through her.
I mean, it sounds sort of silly to say a guy who's about to play in the NBA will be hypothetically living with his mother. But a year ago, he was in high school. And it's one thing, like, even if any of us went from high school 1 year removed, went to a quote-unquote 9-to-5 job,
Yeah. This
isn't that.
No.
This is a whole other level of that. And you're not just the attention, but the guys he's going to be hanging around with, the multimillionaires who have all kinds of money and like to go out, that is getting thrown into the deep end. And if you're not ready for it, so having your mother around, while it's funny, it's probably a good thing.
Tommy Brown, remember? He didn't know how to feed himself.
No, that Sally Jenkins column on him where he walked
McDonald's
to the apartment
and
he had, like, his suits were, he didn't know about dry cleaning.
Yeah.
His suits were all over the floor. I can relate to some of that.
But just so you know, one more thing about Markel, because I was thinking of Kwame when I was interviewing him. Because I said, you know, about pregame routine or whatever, he always used to drink a Mountain Dew before every game. He's not doing that anymore, but he drank some soda. He's just starting to cut soda out of his diet now. But he drank soda at the... you think somebody like that is going to be surrounded by nutritionists and some of the...
Right.
You know, you think he's not going to ever even be allowed to make a bad nutrition choice, but no, you're still on your own. He still gets to choose what he eats and drinks before games, and so up until now, he's had to learn it on his own. But he just cut out Mountain Dew, but that was his his secret before games.
Now, you covered some of the Wizards-Celtics series, so if Markelle Fultz goes number one, he would presumably go to the Celtics. You also, as the official point guard of the Lockdown Wizards podcast, what's your sense of if Markelle Fultz goes to the Celtics?
Can you share a ball with IT?
That, and I guess, like, if we're saying the Wizards and Celtics right now were even, if the Celtics won the series, but, you know, the home team won every game and all that. If that's the case, what is Markelle Fultz, how does he change the dynamic between those two teams?
Between the Celtics and the Wizards?
Yeah, how does he play with Thomas? But then, like, if you're watching those two teams, how does adding that guy change the... things.
Huh, you're looking at a crystal ball. How's it going to change? I don't know how he's going to, the dynamic with the Celtics, but I can tell you that he's going to come back It's tough. It takes a while. But when he first comes back, because the Celtics and the Wizards hate each other, I think he'll give a little bit more goodwill towards the Celtics. I know that he's got some friends in the market on the athletes. He talked about some of the help John Wall's given him, some of the advice about staying the same person, because he went number one overall. He's like, just make sure you stay the same person. Don't let it get to your head. I think actually he could be like an ambassador for the two teams, although I don't want it to be. I want the bad blood to still kind of be there. As far as sharing the ball with IT, I mean, that's a good question. Do you know that Thomas went to Washington?
I am aware of that.
So they already have a relationship.
It would be an interesting scenario. They both went to Washington. One guy would be the number one pick in the draft. The other guy would have been the last pick in the year he came out.
Uh-huh.
So literally same college, yeah. Bookend
yeah.
pick.
Yeah.
How about that?
I just think anyone that goes number one, I didn't say this to Markel, but I would say this publicly to anyone else. I feel a little bit sorry for you. That's a lot of pressure. That's a lot of expectations. And you're going to need to contribute right away. And is any 18-year-old ready to do that at the NBA level? So while they may be multimillionaires overnight, as a mother, I would say that's not the position I would want him in.
Right.
But, you know, I wouldn't be sad if he fell to 10. It's a lot less pressure, tons of money still. Let him take his time being developed. Look at Kelly Oubre. It took him some time to develop. Look at Otto Porter Jr. He was third overall?
Yeah.
Yeah? So Otto Porter, can you imagine if he would have gone number one, especially the way he ended his Georgetown career? And I know you're drafted on potential, right? It's just, there's not a lot of time for you to get ready for the rigors of and the kind of manhood that you have to face in the NBA.
Right.
So
the and to the point about, like, how does he change the dynamic between those two teams? I actually don't think it's that much. I mean, they had Boston's Jaylen Brown, who was the number three pick this year, and he had some good moments in the series,
yeah.
but on the road, he was completely useless. They didn't use him that much. So I'm not saying Markelle Fultz is the same player and he could be a lot better, but the point is, when these kids are coming in as freshmen, none of these kids, as far as I can tell, are transcendent players. There's not a LeBron in this group,
right.
or Carmelo. So the weirdest part for Fultz, and I did not have to get to watch a ton of his games,
uh-huh.
how bad his team was. Like, I know Georgetown had a down year here.
Yeah.
Georgetown had a way better record than Washington
right.
did, and
right.
they had the number one pick, so
right.
that's interesting. So in terms of the Wizards,
it's just the way he was able to perform in front of all these camps.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what we didn't see with some of these, like the Under Armour elite camps. He's going against the elite NBA prospects in the country, and he was dominating like 30 points here. So the way, it's not what he did, I think, in his conference or with Washington or what he did in high school, but it's the way he's performed and kind of the skill set that he has. The thing about IT is I think it's different. Like, IT is what I noticed from him. He can contort his body. He can create space and dribble around people. He's so short and I loved it. You know, scrappy he is.
Did you look him straight in the eye? You being a towering figure?
He totally walked by me more than a few times. What's up, IT? And we're about the same height. So, of course, I'm rooting for him when he wasn't playing the Wizards. But the way he was able to just take a little space, the quick release, fall back threes, you know, he's so strong. I don't see him to be the longevity that I think you're going to get out of a Markelle Fultz.
Right.
Markelle's swing span, I don't know, have you ever heard or talked about it? It's 6'10". I heard he's even grown.
You're the official point guard and the
Markelle
Fultz biographer
Fultz.
Here, yeah.
His wingspan is, he's 6'4", and he's still growing. His wingspan's like 6'10", right now, 6'11". I mean, he's just long, and he's strong and quick, and he's going to get to the paint, too, and create. So, it'll be interesting. I'm excited for him. You know, you got to root for a guy from this area, but especially from a school like DeMatha Catholic.
See, that's why I just wish he wasn't going to Boston.
I know.
Because it would, because...
Oh,
because,
my gosh,
because
I know.
Like, if he fell to 2 and went to the Lakers, it would be a lot easier from that perspective.
Okay, so it's funny because I gave him a Boston shirt. I don't know if you saw it, my story.
I did see it.
Did you see it? So at Game 7, they give this giveaway, and it's the Boston shirt, and we grabbed a couple. After the fact, okay, people leave, they forget them. So we grabbed a couple after the fact. And
you,
I was like,
you don't have to justify your
I wasn't
taking
stealing them off sheet.
You're taking a swag. Hey, we've all been there. We all have choices.
No, I did not steal them. Security guards did not let me just take them off seats. Once the fans all leave,
mm-hmm.
they're like bunched up on the floor. I grabbed
sure.
them. So I give it to them. You wouldn't believe the pushback I got from Wizards fans. How dare I give somebody a Celtics shirt from Game 7. So and I said, look, you know, I'm just happy for a kid. Forget what team he's going to. let's just be happy for a kid from this area. His mom, born and raised in D.C. She's single mother, and I said, Dad's not in the picture at all. She gets his, her, she does this great job. I'm like, can you help me with my kid's mom? She does this great job. She has great advice about always praising effort, not accomplishment. And whatever team he goes to, if anyone trades, if he falls, I just was happy for him. And I thought, and he loved the shirt. And I doubt he ever wears it, but he thought it was, the color looked good on him. So, yeah, I'm just going to root for him secretly, even when he's playing the Wizards. I probably always root for him, just like I do any other. Victor Oladipo comes, and I'm always like, it's so good to see him. You know, you gotta stick with your own a little bit.
You're a nice person like that. we are, before we go any further here on the Locked On Wizards podcast with the great Carol Maloney, I forgot, I told you I screwed this up last week when I had Steinberg here. One of the things we do here when we're eating at the Parkway Deli is we discuss what we ordered and we compare and we say how it relates to the Wizards.
Okay.
So you're going to be on the spot in a second. Now, I sort of choked at the last second. I didn't know what I was doing and the waiter came and I felt like I needed order. I got the open-faced brisket sandwich.
And your thoughts?
Yeah, my thoughts are sort of that the Wizards were at their best when they played sort of an open court game.
Mm-hmm.
When they were up-tempo, when they were slow, wasn't good. So John Wall, like his passing, was sort of like the gravy on top of the thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my comparison. It was open sandwich, open floor game, gravy, John Wall passing. That's what I got. How about you?
Okay, I didn't put any Wizards thought into my order.
No.
I ordered the Delight, which I think is
nor should you. I'm
fitting.
Insane.
I asked the waiter, what should I order? Because I like to get the waiter's recommendations. And he said the Delight was his favorite. So I looked at the, it's a, of course, it's a Reuben. I mean, who doesn't love a Reuben, good Reuben? But I got the rye bread. And by the way, it was probably the best sandwich I've ever had in 38 years. A little bit like this was the best Wizards team I've seen in 38 years. It was so good. It is a fatty kind of meat with like the toasted, I got rye instead of pumpernickel, and a lot of good like sauce. So I would say just delicious. Now I'm a little too full, but I'm excited about the next chance. This was a little bit more like I'm excited about the Wizards season starting because I think they're trending up.
Ooh, okay. So your sandwiches your sandwich choices in life are turning up, are the Wizards.
That's right. That's my connection.
That's right. And at least you came from exercising prior to this. I came from sitting on the couch and we'll return to that. So my
this
choice.
This weather is a good sit on the couch
day. Yeah, that's good. I'm going to use the weather as my excuse for that. Let's go back to the Wizards. So you were up there in Boston for Game 7.
Yeah.
You obviously have been around them, not just this year, but other years.
Not enough, though. You know how it goes.
As somebody who actually likes your presence, I agree, not enough. In fairness to you, you were dealing with mostly cap stuff. That's kind of just how.
Comcast Sportsnet is so gung ho Wizards that as a station, NBC Washington, I still cover them, but I can do it from the studio easier than having to get there myself and have to do the shows from there because that requires a lot more effort. So when I did go, I made sure that I went. We went on the games that really we needed to be there. When they played the Celtics, when they played the Warriors. I went media day, of course, as you remember, and some of the early stuff. But we tried to balance it out. It's just the ways of sports media now. I can't get there every day. I wish I could because I, as you know, I'm a huge basketball fan.
When you have a show at 6 o'clock and the game is at 7, that kind of makes it a little hard.
You can't do live. We can't go live from there in the late show because of just the possibility that we wouldn't make it. I couldn't cover the game and post game. The Wizards, more than any other team, take forever to open the locker room.
You're telling me.
Tell me why. Why is it not 10 minutes?
It's just the way, and I guess the real reality is that some guys, when we're done, so the way it works is the game ends, there's like a 5-minute gap between us, the game ending, and Scott Brooks talking, something like that, where we talk to Brooks for 5 to 10 minutes, and then we go from him, the locker room is then open.
The locker room should open when Brooks starts talking. That's the way other teams do it. Just FYI.
Well, like hockey, it's the reverse. Hockey, we get the players first, then the coach.
Yeah.
And it's weird because I've said this before. Like I remember covering a Pittsburgh Penguins game a couple years ago. The game ends literally the second the game ends. You file your story, walk immediately out to the locker room, and I walked in and Sidney Crosby is sitting there ready to talk. I'm this is crazy. On the flip
caps
side,
caps are like within 10 minutes of the game ending. You're already been in the locker room. You're out.
On the flip side. So anyway, if you go to the Wizards, some guys are already gone.
Yeah.
A lot of the role players are probably ready to go to talk, but John Wall, he was better this year, but he sometimes will take his time. It's because he's getting training,
yeah.
training staff and all that stuff. Last week I had Steinberg on here, like I said, Dan Steinberg,
yeah.
and among the topics we discussed is sort of the Wizards' place within the D.C. sports scene. I don't necessarily need to go back down that path again, but one thing I'm sort of curious, so as you, from your perspective, when you're dealing with the Wizards, the Caps, the Redskins, the Nats, whatever, which one do you like? I don't necessarily know, as a professional that you are,
I mean,
which one do you like covering the most?
So journalistically, it's a case-by-case basis. It's about, you know, the situation, the day, the timing of the seasons, of course. But when the Caps and the Wizards were both home court, home ice advantage, it made it easy because they weren't in town at the same time.
Right.
So obviously, we give the emphasis on the teams in town, but NBC and NHL had the deal. So we gave probably more on-air time to the Caps while we knowing that the Wizards were as deserving as anyone to... the stories and the storylines were so great with the Wizards this postseason. And they were a team trending up. But the way the Caps work, and it was, and you didn't know, I really still believe right up until like the final horn and watching the Penguins celebrate on our ice uh-huh. again, I believed that there was a chance for them just to break through. I think it was the series.
That's adorable.
Is it adorable? The 10 minutes left in the third period, I was like, this can't be happening again. I actually walked to go get a donut. They give out donuts in the press room. I left my seat, press seat. I'm like, I'm not going to watch because I feel like if I stop watching, they can just feel my laser hot focus. But then if I stop watching, they're going to score a goal. I'll just see it on replay. And I walked away. I was like, this can't be happening. They're going to score game 7 at home. Anyway. It feels like with the Caps that it's over forever. And I know that's totally the long line of overreactors I come from. But for me, as someone who's covered that team, and I was their beat person for a long, long time with TSN 15 years ago, with Alex Ovechkin, older, all these great players they had around him, you know, being free agents. You just wonder if and McClellan said himself 2 years ago that there was a 2-year window. And McClellan said that himself, the GM. So you wonder, and Trotz is the kind of coach that, you know, he's going to be like, keep knocking on the door. They're going to find some good talent around them. They're going to get this. But if you can't win with the best team compiled together on the same ice that I, for one, have never seen in 20 years covering sports. You can't win with this kind of team, this deep, talented team with all these different weapons. And how are you ever going to win? Well, look at Nashville.
Right, the team that Trotz left 3 years ago
look
to come
Nashville.
Here.
They just
made the cup final.
And then to watch them, watch the way that's... Did you see the celebrations? That's what I look at. That's what gave me...
Is Carrie Underwood there?
Probably.
Well, right.
But it's just to see how freaked out people were. The stands were absolutely going nuts. The players, just that kind of joy. I wonder if we'll ever experience that on any team. I know the Nats have 117 games or something until playoffs start, and I'm just assuming they're going to win their division because they have a 6.5 game lead as of today, and they're the best offensive team I've ever seen since they've been here, 05, but will they work out some of those issues, the number one with people been. So anyway, to answer your question, what story gets the most play? And every day we have to figure it out. Obviously, Redskins were a story this week because they had the golf tournament tomorrow, and this is the first week of OTAs and seeing some things out. There is no Redskins offseason. I'm just not as passionate about them right now. I really don't care about position battles right now. I'm going to go cover it, but I'm until I see him go, you know, there's no contact. So what are we going to see tomorrow when we go out to practice?
For the NBC 4 website that I once in a while help out on, like when they had their rookie camp, one of the things, I wrote like 4 things to pay attention to because you explained to me if I'm going to write for the website, it's got to be 4.
Well, 4 is
like... Because that's your thing?
I say 4 and then I go like, I'll say 4 questions and I'll do 8 just because I get follow-ups.
But you
call it 4 things.
Yeah, you're excited. So, and one of the things I wrote was, whatever you hear, dial it back by about 50.
Yeah.
Everybody's going to overreact to everything because nothing's happening, so everybody's trying to make up a story. Like, I've already seen too many people write lists. Like, we're not going to talk about the Redskins here, but it's sort of just the point in general. Everybody's going to say how great so-and-so looks or this guy impressed. Nobody knows shit.
That's so, always off-season. Oh, we can say the S-word on your show?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, yeah.
I don't think you can. It would ruin your image, though. You're like a princess.
I don't. I actually learned a long time ago that you don't ever cuss, even in your real life, because you never know when a live mic is around. This my second job in Iowa, the weather girl had the... Was she weather? Or she was just filling in. But her mic was still on. She went to the bathroom, and she cussed like a truck driver. And her mic was hot.
Or you could be a guy.
She got fired.
Oh.
And it wasn't even her fault, but you don't cuss. I mean, the stuff she was saying to someone in the bathroom.
Or it could be, you could be on an HBO show documenting your weird history, and you could have a live mic on, and you can confess to a murder.
Yeah. That was actually fascinating.
That was
show.
An awesome show.
Yeah. Anyway, we're going off the rails.
This is what we do here. This is why I said during 15 minutes it goes longer.
Let's talk about why John Wall wouldn't sign an extension. Did you already cover this?
We have not gotten into that.
Why in the heck is that even a storyline? Of course he's going to sign an extension.
I would think that's
a no-brainer, right? Except would he get more money if he made All-NBA, if he doesn't sign the extension this year?
Well, he already, I'm not going to lie, I'm not exactly a salary cap expert, but I think now that he made an All-NBA team this year, it's already there.
So it'd basically 2 years of what he has, which is what, 18 and 19 right. million a year, and then would jump up to 36 million, right? So that's because of this extension, and it's a four-year extension, and we pay him $36 million a year. And there were these headlines out talking about maybe he wants, because of course everybody says during exit interviews, I don't even want to think about the future. I'm just going to talk to my agent. I'll see what's best for me and my family, blah, blah, blah. That's just what they say. I don't even hear it. I hear wah, 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 wah. So, but of course he'd sign an extension. Of course he wants to stay at D.C. Don't even tell me that's a storyline out there.
I don't think it's a storyline. The only thing I would say is that, like, the number is sort of like 5 years, $210 million, something like that, is like what he's eligible to get now. If he went somewhere else, it would be like four for like one, I don't know, 160.
I read if he doesn't sign this extension now, then he makes another All-NBA team. Tell me if I'm wrong.
No, you're probably right.
And he'd get even more money. Like, is a little bit of a Kirk Cousins where he could possibly use another...
Well, I think if you get first team and something. The larger point is, and this is a question that I certainly will never have to deal with you as a television star, May.
I love how you just keep giving me compliments. Just side. Keep going. Yes. Television
at
star.
At what point does the money not matter? In other words, if I'm going to make $160 million no matter what I do.
I don't think there's any point. There's no point. Money always matters. Don't tell me it didn't matter to him that Beal was made more this year.
You say that, and like, I'll veer back to something you were talking about before with Markelle Fultz, and you said with Markelle Fultz, maybe being the number one pick isn't ideal on some level. It's more pressure. If you're less pressure, if you're, say, the 10th pick.
I just more patience, too. More patience than pressure. I want someone, if I'm his relative or... If I'm rooting for him, really rooting for him, number one's cool and you're the star for the night, the draft, and everyone. But I want a team to be more patient with me.
Okay, and so in terms of, say, the Wizards, they have Otto Porter as a restricted free agent. Some people think he could get a max contract. I don't know if I buy that, but okay.
What is that, $100 million for him? What would that be for him?
Beal just got one. I don't know the exact number. Beal got 120-something over 5 years, so somewhere in that general range. But let's just say what somebody offers in that. The pressure that would come with that. So let's say some other team offers it and he went to take that. The pressure that comes with that is big. The other team doesn't watch him every day like we do, and they're going to think that they're getting a guy who's worth all that. His ego, his personality, his style of play is not of that.
Yeah.
And I think it would actually be something of a mistake to take the more money over there than stay here where he's been for the last 6 years. He's got Georgetown around the corner where he goes to a lot.
Yeah.
He could play with John Wall. He can sort of be the third guy. We already kind of know what he is. So I'm saying in some cases, I do think taking the more money isn't always, for the person, the right move. Now, in John Wall's case, maybe it is, but at the same point, you know, like a lot of these guys, he likes being in L.A., hypothetically. If he can get $160 million and go play out in Los Angeles, is that better? I don't know. Maybe.
Well, you're talking lifestyle, then.
Well, that is my plan.
I mean that's just like town where I want to live. It's
or winning a championship. I mean, hypothetically, in, you know, next year, let's just, I'm not making stuff up, but the Lakers, they get Paul George, they trade Lonzo. The second
pick. So you're just making a case for why it's possible John Wall's not a Wizard.
I'm just saying that I would think you're right. If you made me put money down on the table, I would push all my chips to him taking the extension.
Yeah.
But I do wonder sometimes where does that life factor come into play?
You're going to hate that I say this, and I'm being totally honest. I don't.
Sure.
It's a thought crossed my mind more than And by the way, I don't say I hate Boston like I do Pittsburgh, okay?
Sure.
But it, and they're spoiled to death. Those sports fans, and they know it.
Oh, I mean,
they're incorrigible. I can't stand to be around them. They are so freaking awesome, that environment. And if I'm going, you know how, and I was surprised. Game six, how late arriving everybody was. Was it 8 o'clock tip?
Yeah.
It took us until, took DC until halftime, third quarter before the whole arena was into it. This Boston crowd, by experiencing it, because I've never seen a game at the Garden, I always wanted to. It was like the John Wall game-winning shot moment the entire game. The way that everybody was in every play.
Well, that was supposedly like the deciding factor for Al Horford. I guess he was going to get the same money here or there when we went to Boston. And supposedly one of the deciding factors was the crowd atmosphere at Boston, right, versus certainly Atlanta where he was, and to some degree D.C. But yeah, it's just a better atmosphere.
People who are listening to your podcast are not to blame, because they're your diehard sports fans. But there is some there, and that's why I feel like we need to crack some ceilings and make some history for some generation of sports fans to get them to believe again. Because my kids aren't as into it, and how can I not get them into it? Because they don't think they'll ever win here. I mean, the 13-year-old's like, why do you even bother? We're just gonna lose.
When did you move here?
I moved here in 2001. I'm as native as you get, though, because I'm raising my kids here. This is my hometown. My husband's from here.
Wait, so 2001, so you've seen, all you've seen is Maryland?
Yeah, the Final Four.
So
yeah,
you've seen none of them?
No.
Oh,
but I was in D.C. I was in Denver for the Broncos twice and the Avs. I wasn't there for when the Rockies went to the World Series, but I've seen what it does to a firsthand and reported. And Denver was also, like, my mom lived in Colorado. Denver was also, like, I felt like a adopted hometown, where this is actually my home. Like, I'm never leaving D.C. So I couldn't be more D.C. other than the fact that I still don't honk at people when they don't see the green light.
What if, like, the Walking Dead starts happening? Are you going to leave then, or are you going to stay?
What does that mean, Walking Dead?
You know, like the TV show Walking Dead, and they all turn into zombies?
Yeah, no,
you're
gonna, I
don't, stay then?
Yeah, I'm going to stay and fight.
You're...
To the end, we fight. Never surrender. Where's my barbed wire bat from Bryce Harper?
Ooh.
Yeah. That was a Walking Dead bat, by the way.
Was that I don't actually watch the show.
That's another story I broke.
Oh, you are you are the story breaker.
Yeah.
I'll get you out of here in a second. I'm a little concerned, though. I'm just making sure you're okay, though, because, like, you are the... of the Washington Press Corps, you are the official upbeat person of the Washington Press Corps. And I feel like on this podcast, like, I'm the guy who brings everybody down. We talk all serious. I just want to make sure I'm not bringing you down.
No, I'm depressed. Right? No, I'm depressed. I'm depressed about the state of sports. And luckily we have summer to kind of lick our wounds. And I think about the Nats. I always like, well, then, you know, the Nats are knocking on the door, and I'll be ready to, like, buy in again and do a playoff run with them. I hate best of fives. I hate how MLB does it, though. The best of five doesn't mean always the best team wins. I mean, we just saw how the best team doesn't always win in hockey. That happens, though, in playoff hockey all the time. Anyway, as far as the Wizards go, because that's what we're here to talk about, I know.
You go wherever your heart's taking you.
Well, then, I actually am encouraged with the Wizards. I love me some Scott Brooks. I don't know what he did. I want to get him to write a book or something. I loved how he reached the team. You tell me that he didn't get him playing the hardest they have on defense. That was more Randy Whitman style. I'm telling you, it looked, from my perception of just, and I'm tuning in and out, but I'm catching most of every game. But sometimes from afar, they looked as committed and to believing in him and his system that I've seen. And I know Randy Whitman was a good coach, and Eddie Jordan was a good coach. You know, I love Flip Saunders. I'm not trying to take anything away from them. Scott Brooks, I really was just supremely impressed with him this year. If only they didn't have the 2-8 start, they would have had home court advantage. They would have no better seed, and they would have beaten the Celtics. Dang it! All goes back to that 2-8 start.
Dang it, indeed. No, he's definitely a people person. There's no doubt about that.
So, but people person doesn't even mean a player's coach. And
well,
a good
yeah,
coach.
Now that I said that, like, I was going people person in the sense that a player's coach, it's essentially the same thing, but, like, even just the way he dealt with us. Like, it's the way he dealt with us that makes me think that he deals with them in the same way, and that's why they're responding. He's always, I've said this before on the podcast, he's always the same level with us, whether it's the most veteran reporter in the room or one of these kids that's asking a question, he kind of keeps it same. He almost never, maybe once all year did I see him sort of lose his cool, and even then it was...
Tell me, when?
Imperceptible. There was one point a year where he was getting frustrated with Oubre, and you could tell he was... got to a point was like, I can't deal with where he's at right now with this game. But even still, it was so minor. If you just jumped in that, saw that one press conference, you wouldn't even have noticed it.
Was it tone or was it context of what he was saying?
Both of what he was saying. I mean, he was kind of saying like he needs to.
I think I remember. You guys made some headlines out of it.
I'm sure people did. I don't write anymore.
Yeah.
So at least I wasn't then.
How spoiled are we that we have what I consider to be the best group of professional coaches in town right now?
Oh, 100%.
I mean, I would say Dusty Baker's my favorite. No, Scott Brooks now my favorite. No, you know, Barry Trotz is my favorite.
Right, of the four, Barry Trotz is probably the least interesting, and he's way better than most of the
See, and
guys.
I think he's... You just pose a question and let him muse. He's just like, he's one of the greatest hockey minds of anyone I've ever talked to. I started here when Ron Wilson was the head coach. You know, Bruce Cassidy. I went through all those guys. And Barry Trotz, and he still knows, because he was excited, because he came out of the World Championships and he was on Team Canada's assistant. He loved being in all the room with all those hockey minds and how much he learned, how excited he got. So you got to kind of, you're probably more of a diehard. You have more of a sliver of people who really get into hockey and forechecking and strategy and whatever. But I'm one of those people, so I love listening to him. And he's long-winded, which is another person like myself, obviously.
I was about to say, wait, you're calling him long-winded, but I can tell you were saying that as a compliment. Well, great. You should love, this should be your favorite podcast, then. My entire deal is being long-winded.
I can fill up a huge segment. Not so much with Scott Brooks, but if I need a 5-minute, you know, we do a 5-minute sponsored segment, it's 3 questions for Barry Trotz. How many questions is that for Scott Brooks for 5 minutes?
It could be about that.
Depends on what the questions are.
Yeah, it depends on his mood and questions. I remember once, and this will probably get me in trouble if he hears this, but we did a preseason press conference with Ted Leonsis 1 year for the Wizards. Half an hour, 3 questions.
Yeah,
I was like, wow.
Same. Did the Ted just say, we have it on the web too? Did a Ted sit down? And I only had 3 or 4 in my head. I didn't have a list or anything. I just had 3 or 4 I wanted to ask. And it went 27 minutes. We started talking about driverless cars and high-speed rails. Somehow our talk about playoff runs got into the way technology is changing everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not saying it wasn't interesting. I'm just saying it was just he had things to say and he was able to do it and keep going. Speaking of keep going, if I keep going, the podcast will get an unwieldy amount of time and you have to life the lead, so I should like to let you go and stuff.
Thank you for having me locked on Wizards.
Yeah,
well, it's my debut.
Yeah, it's long overdue. I have found that it's taken. If I get people to come to the Parkway Deli, then they said
free lunch. I was like, what day?
That's exactly.
It used to be like, let's meet on some corner at 8 o'clock at night and talk Wizards.
Right, that sounds really sketchy, but we mean that in a good way. Well, Carol, definitely appreciate it. Of course, go follow Carol on Twitter at CarolMaloney4. But if you follow her, be nice. So I don't need don't harass. She's a nice lady. Be nice to her.
That's funny. Yeah, I was talking to Ben a little bit about some people who like to troll you. I think that's just what Twitter's for.
So it is, but like I can be a jerk. I can be overly opinionated. You're like nice. You're like,
I'm opinionated. Don't get me wrong. I just put it on Twitter all the time.
Yeah, but when you're opinionated, but like with like a upbeat. Like I'm like Debbie Downer opinionated.
We'll see if I can still be that after what I just went through the last few weeks.
Yeah, I am concerned right now.
I'm done.
I feel like we need to send you to like Disney World or somewhere right now.
But I have the Redskins OTAs to look forward to. That's gonna get my mood up. Kidding. I mean, maybe I shouldn't be snarky. Maybe Snarky doesn't play in Lockdown Wizards, but it's going to be a nice summer of baseball. We do have that flip court too.
I was concerned your general demeanor would not play here because I'm snarky. It's nothing but snarky and poking holes and poking the bear all the time. All right. Anyway, Carol, definitely appreciate it. Of course, go check out her Markelle Fultz 2 interviews, one with him and one with Mother Markelle over on the NBCWashington.com. Carol, we'll see you soon.
Everybody just stuff me. Deal gets open for 3. Dagger!
Long drive, off balance shot.
Dagger!
Long ball.